Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we're going to take you to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. We're going to do a refresh on that. We originally did one of our first episodes was on Puerto Vallarta, and it's changed since then. So we're going to get a little update. Our guest today is Herschel Allen Weisfeld, and we'll tell you a little bit about Herschel. Herschel was born in 1961 in McAllen, Texas, along the southern border just across the Rio Grande River from Reynosa, Mexico, and graduated from public school in 1979. While in high school, he studied real estate and received his Texas real estate salesman license as soon as he turned 18 and his real estate broker's license at the age of 23. He received a bachelor's degree in business management with a concentration in accounting from Tulane University in New Orleans in 1983. He moved to Dallas, Texas in the spring of 1984, where he built a self-directed real estate investment company, where he still owns and manages a diverse portfolio of commercial real estate rental properties. He came out to his family in the fall of 1984, and today is single and breeds the National Dog of Mexico, of which he has eight dogs, and shares these fine miniature hairless cholos, who is just as passionate about the breed as was Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera, who brought attention to the 3,500-year-old breed that the Aztecs held in high esteem. Wow, that must be something. I want to see them. So he also spent decades engaged in cultural, political, and civic communities by giving of both his time and resources, of which the list is endless. He has received countless awards and recognitions from art, historic preservation, to homelessness, sitting on many boards, commissions, and task force, both in the U.S. and in Mexico. In 2003, while vacationing in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, he bought a small home on a mountainside overlooking the romantic zone and assembled three additional adjoining properties where he designed and built Hacienda Herschito, which includes six fully furnished rental apartments along with his private residence, which was designed as a boutique hotel but occupied as his private home. These acquisitions were astute moves before the word got out about PV and the extensive condo explosion took place. Today, Herschel is once again working on a new construction project, which is an assemblage of six properties on a higher mountaintop that will be home with gardens unlike anything that could be found in the romantic zone. I want to see that. That's amazing. Today, so that his dogs will have plenty of room to roam, and is known as La Casa Nuevo de la Familia de Yoli y Temo. Did I say all of that right?
Mark, I really appreciate that kind introduction. Yes, I breed Cholo Squinklies. They are the hairless dog. Yoli and Temo was the first boy and first girl that I got. Yolanda is short for Yoli, is short for Yolanda, and Temo is short for Cuauhtémoc. Cuauhtémoc was the last emperor, Aztec emperor, and they are the original pair from which I've been breeding these miniature dogs that I have developed some amazing friendships around North America, from Canada to the U.S. and in Mexico, with people that have ended up with my puppies, which is kind of interesting because so many people do come to Puerto Vallarta from so many different places. They get exposed or aware of the breed. And the fact that I've received accolades for what I've been doing with preserving the breed and the quality of my dogs. You know, everybody has their family. My dogs are my family. I'm fortunate to have a human family as well. but my pets love me unconditionally. And so the property that I'm building, as I call La Casa Nueva de la Familia de Yoli y Temo, is that they'll have plenty of yards to run and play in. And of course, it's designed, as I have most of my real estate projects, for adaptive uses for other purposes, which this will as well. You know, being retired here in Puerto Vallarta, I always jokingly say, what does the word retired mean? It sounds like new treads on old tires. And I'm not an old tire, but I'm still working and have, you know, ongoing responsibilities in Texas. But I spend about 90% of my time here in Puerto Vallarta. Go back to Dallas, go back to McAllen, Texas, maybe about an average of 4 or 5 days every 2 months.
That's why we're so lucky to speak with you, because we finally found somebody that's been there. And you said you've been there for 20 years?
I have.
20 yeah. years, and you spend 90% of the time there. And those dogs, they fascinate me. I have two dogs of my own.
I'll share with you, Mark, you can't get my dogs online. You can't get them unless you meet me and you come to my home and my dogs and you sit together one-on-one. And if my dogs tell me that they like you and they want to be with you, then you will have that privilege and opportunity. Otherwise, they are the best judge of character.
I'm so curious about them. I don't want to make this episode about dogs, but I'm so curious about them because I love dogs, and these are different, apparently. Yeah. What are their like dispositions?
They're terribly intelligent dogs. Pixar, Disney, created a movie called The Adventures of Coco, which was an animated movie about the Cholo Squinkly and its purpose that the Aztecs used as spiritual guides when one dies to go to the afterworld. And these dogs really have a strong sense of character. They're very protective. They're very loving. Now, think about an animal that has no hair, that wants to lie up and be with you and love on you. It's almost like having a human partner. Or you pointed to your bald head, which people can't see or hear you doing that, but I saw you doing that. The humor of it is, yes, it is a hairless animal that doesn't shed, doesn't have ticks, doesn't have fleas. They are warm to the touch, which is one of the reasons that the Aztecs considered them also healing animals, almost like a hot water bottle. So when you have an ache or a pain and you feel like you want a heating pad,
you just put them up against you.
And it's interesting with, of course, I'm blessed and fortunate to have 8 today. I've had as many as 13 at a time. But when you sleep with all of them, they find the right spot because you've got spots for them to pick from.
I love it.
They're really wonderful, loving, compassionate animals. And they know when you're happy and they know when you're in pain. And they really offer a source of healing for me and for others who have them as well.
Well, when I come out to visit PV, and I know I will, I haven't been there yet, actually. But when I do come out, which would probably be sometime next year, I want to meet you and I want to meet the doggies.
Well, Mark, I appreciate that. Let me just share with you, Herschel is my name here in Mexico. Herschel is not a common name, but they know the brand of chocolate called Hershey's in Spanish. And so I have lots of Herschelisms. And one of my Herschelisms is PV, otherwise known as permanent vacation. So when you come to visit, you know you'll come for a permanent vacation. That permanency may be for 3 days or 5 days or 10 days. Some come and they realize this is where they want to stay forever. But it's my humorous, you know, what does PV stand
for? Herschelism. I love it.
Permanent vacation.
Permanent vacation. All right. So tell the audience, why did you choose Puerto Vallarta, or we can call it Vallarta, like everyone else does. Why did you choose that 20 years ago? Did you read into the future?
Mark, I didn't really choose it. I came here for a friend's birthday. I first came in Puerto Vallarta in 1984 with my first boyfriend on a vacation. And I was exposed to the Bay of Banderas. It's the world's, second largest bay. Beautiful body of water, surrounded by the Sierra Madres. The ecosystem and the natural environment is dynamic. Came, as I said, for a friend's birthday. Puerto Vallarta can be whatever you want it to be. Sometimes people say Puerto Vallarta is where alcoholics come to be social drinkers, because there's plenty of bars to choose from as well. I came particularly for a birthday, and I found myself intrigued with the city. And 20 plus years ago, which was my second time back after my first visit in 84, I was roaming around. And I ventured into a neighborhood that was at the time the other side of the highway, as they say, which is Highway 200, known as Barrio Navidad. And Barrio Navidad is literally only 5 blocks from the beach, but the real resort was within the highway and the beachfront. And I found a little house that was the price of what most people spend for a car, $45,000, which today in Puerto Vallarta, 20 years later, you will never find that.
Oh, yeah.
Because Puerto Vallarta has become such a popular place. And so I bought the little house. I was blessed and fortunate that the uncle who owned the property next door made me an invitation to join he and his wife for lunch. They offered me to buy their property, which I did. And then following that, I bought 2 properties on the other side of the house as well. And unfortunately, the reason I had to buy the second 2 was because of the fact that it was slated to be another high-rise condo development about 10 years ago. And that's what's the fate of Puerto Vallarta, is that we are creating a high-density resort community where lots of people from all walks of life want to come and have a piece of paradise. And so they're buying what I call a box in a building, and they create this lock-and-leave lifestyle, which is really the ideal lifestyle for retirees. They don't want the responsibility of the yard that they used to have and the pool that they used to have and all of the other demands of home ownership that we would have in the U.S. Added to the fact that, of course, here in Puerto Vallarta in Mexico, property taxes are negligible, relatively speaking, compared to what we pay on property taxes in the U.S. And as I started spending my 3 weeks vacation that I was here for a birthday, and I found this house, and I started asking lots of questions and doing lots of, you know, inquiries to as many people as I could. And being in the real estate business anyway in Texas, it's naturally in my blood. And I've won many awards for adaptive reuses of buildings. And I saw this little house. I climbed the tree that was in the backyard, which was a beautiful mango tree. I heard from the neighbors that this tree at this house has the sweetest mangoes. And as I climbed the tree, I saw the spectacular views from this tree. And I thought, well, I can build a house and build my dream resort vacation spot, never even imagining that it would be a retirement home. I just thought it'd be a vacation property.
Yeah.
And as they say, you know, time plays out and passes and it tells the story as to what the real, you know, case is turning out to be. And that's how it all started. And so I decided that I was going to design and build this home around this mango tree because it was here before I was, and it was taller than me. And I've received many acknowledgments for doing just that. So as we say, mi casa es tu casa. So the main house was designed as a boutique hotel. I've got 6 guest bedrooms in the main house. I have a grand salon where we can do private events. And then outside the main house is the 6 guest apartments. And it's built just like the condo buildings. They're all about six or seven stories tall. I've got a rooftop environment. I built a garden on my rooftop, like most people would build a rooftop pool. I built a rooftop garden, so it's an entire rooftop that's a giant planter box where I have a fig tree, I have pomegranate tree, I have an orange tree, a grapefruit tree, a lemon tree, a lime tree. I have something called gondo, which is elderberry, interestingly enough. And during COVID, I stayed here in Puerto Vallarta, had a wonderful life here in Vallarta with not a lot of tourists in the city. And as I was reading more and more, elderberry was one of the holistic natural ingredients that people were using to help fight issues and
COVID.
And I had a fresh elderberry plant right here at my home. Yeah, it's really quite amazing.
There you go. That's unbelievable.
I've got 23 different fruit bearing trees on the property, and I've tried to, you know, offer that to my neighbors as well, whether it's the avocados or the lychees or the star fruit or the guavas, the bananas. It's really quite an oasis. And Puerto Vallarta can be just that for anybody, depending on what your desire is. There's so many diverse options for living here in this city.
So let me ask you a question. 20 years ago, did the Romantic Zone exist? Or was your first house in the Romantic Zone?
20 years ago, my house was in the Colonia that we call Emiliano Zapata. Okay. Emiliano Zapata includes what is also the Romantic Zone. But the Romantic Zone at the time, because, of course, it was part of the growth and development and marketing, was essentially from Highway 200 going up to the beach, which, as I said, is approximately five blocks deep. So then as the community started growing and they started buying properties in the neighborhood, for example, there was a beautiful large single home behind Hacienda Hercito. It's now a high-rise condo, so they took one single-family residence, turned it into 36 households.
Wow.
And, of course, they pride themselves in marketing that it is all part of the Romantic Zone.
So you have, how many did you say, six altogether?
I have six apartments outside of the main house, and then the main house is six master bedroom suites. And I did that because I'm one of six children. And so I have five siblings, and I wanted to be able to have a home where all my brothers and sisters could come to. So if they wanted a bedroom in the main house, or if they wanted their own apartment, everybody has their choice.
Look at you. That's amazing. I love it. I love it. Good work, Herschel.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sure. So tell us, for the people that are listening that haven't been to Puerto Vallarta, where is it located within Mexico?
Puerto Vallarta is on the west coast of the mainland Mexico. It is by plane 2 hours, 15 minutes nonstop from Dallas to Puerto Vallarta. It's an international airport. You can basically fly nowadays nonstop from Canada. They now have flights from London coming here to Puerto Vallarta as well. As I said, it's along the Sierra Madre mountain ridges that bounds the two sides. And Puerto Vallarta is at the mouth of many rivers, from the Horcones River to the south, to the Boca de Tomatlan, which is the Tomatlan River, to the Rio Quale, which many people hear the Rio Quale is the main river that runs through the heart of the city of Puerto Vallarta. It's between Emiliano Zapata, which is the Romantic Zone, to the south of the river. To the north of the river is El Centro, which is also otherwise known as Gringo Gulch, which is very popular for those who have an affinity for Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, because that's where their homes were that have been completely remodeled and converted into hotels. So there's a lot of also, you know, theater history here and movie history here because of those days back in the 60s when John Huston, the he was the director of the movie called The Night of the Iguana. And that's where a lot of attention came to Puerto Vallarta, which Puerto Vallarta was originally called Puerto Las Peñas. And Ignacio Vallarta was one of the political leaders that came here to Vallarta, and he helped develop and expand the affinity and attraction to the area. And of course, with John Huston coming here as well, bringing Ava Gardner and Richard Burton, who starred in the movie. A lot of people are always confused because they think The Night of the Iguana was Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor. No, Elizabeth Taylor came to Puerto Vallarta because she was married to Richard Burton. She was worried that Richard Burton might be having an affair with Ava Gardner. So, get a little facts straight, because it is always interesting to hear people tell others as you're walking through, say, the Isla Quale, which is a beautiful little part of the city. Isla Quale is an island between the river. The river forks, the Rio Quale River forks, and at the head of the river is a cultural center, where as a retiree, as a tourist, they have classrooms. They have, you can take all the traditional Mexican classes, whether it's guitar, whether it's the tambos, whether it's etching, whether it's painting. You can take Mexican folkloric ballet and dance. They have a little theater there as well. And it's always intriguing to me when I take my guests on a tour and you'll see classes, open air classrooms, that are about 50% what looks like foreign nationals and locals. Mm-hmm. So it's really something that's available and accessible to everybody, whether you're a local Mexican or just a tourist that's coming to Puerto Vallarta for a month and you want to find some activities to do.
And you're in the state of Jalisco, correct?
This is the state of Jalisco. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah, my state's right.
Jalisco is Guadalajara. And Puerto Vallarta is a very easy to fly in and out of. Guadalajara is a world-class major city. Just outside is San Sebastian, which is one of the heritage, world heritage sites. It's called a Puerto Mágico, a magic port, is San Sebastian, which is just about an hour and 10-minute drive outside of Puerto Vallarta.
Okay. And Ajijic and Chapala is all around there as well, like 40
That's
minutes
going
away.
That's more towards Guadalajara, which right. The drive to Guadalajara is about 4.5 hours.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's that far. Okay.
Yes.
So, Herschel, how do you think over the years, like what makes a place like Puerto Vallarta turn gay? I mean, it's like the gay place of the world. It's one of them. It's amazing, like, all of a sudden, you hear, you know, the gays are coming, and they're gentrifying, and how does that happen?
You know, Mark, that's a really great question, because I think it starts with being open and honest with who you are, and being willing to be open and honest in public. And I think the public display is what builds acceptance, that when you are able to hold the hand of your partner and walk down the street past the Catholic Church here in Puerto Vallarta.
And they don't care.
And to be able to be unconditionally accepted. I mean, there are religious factions, of course, that base their judgment on religion. But at the end of the day, I think it's a matter of participating, whether it's someone like a Bob Price, who was a gay man who came from San Francisco and created the botanical gardens here in Vallarta, and creates a botanical garden that becomes world class and recognized. Whether it's someone like Daryl, who opens Act Two, that creates a theater environment where they bring in world class art and culture from a theatrical perspective. Whether it's the Teatro Vallarta, which is a cultural venue that builds on more traditional Mexican cultural theater. And you have a variety. You have the OPC, the Office of Public Culture, which is an office to build arts and culture. And you know, we as gay people tend to have an affinity and appreciation for the finer things, the arts and the culture of a community. We respect the architecture of the community. And I think all of those things build a foundation of mutual respect to where you have a local economy and local property owners and hotel operators and restaurant owners that realizes that there is a strong economic value to gay tourism. And we build on that. And as it builds, it just snowball effects to the point that we are today in Puerto Vallarta, that, I mean, there is a huge gay pride that takes place every year here in Puerto Vallarta. I mean, every community within the LGBTQ community is welcomed and accepted in Vallarta. And there are activities and events that take place year-round. You go to the calendar and you can find everything in Vallarta on Facebook and the groups that have hundreds of thousands of members. And you can see that we are appreciated. And that's what continues to build that momentum. I think the fact that you have a mayor that realizes the economic value of our buying power, that came out, the mayor from 18 years ago that said, we're going to continue to build this community and we're going to welcome people in this community. And part of that is by expanding the airport today. Part of that is someone like a Dean Rieger who came to Puerto Vallarta and partnered with the old marina, the old port, and is a very strong advocate of the LGBT community to build a marina port that has events and activities that's embracing of all of the communities. I know you asked the question specifically about, you know, the LGBT faction and that component because we are gay men. But I think it's important to acknowledge that in Puerto Vallarta, everyone is welcomed. I mean, going to the Sheraton Hotel that has an all-inclusive package that has families of 15, hetero families of 15, lying in benches on at the pool deck with gay and lesbian couples scattered between them. To me, it's not a matter of saying, well, is the romantic zone the gay zone? The gay and lesbian population is scattered from the southern shore to the northern shore, you know, and that, I think, is what really builds the value because we have not ghettoized ourselves. While there is a concentration of where are the gay bars, that's the concentration. But otherwise, as a population, we are spread out between the north and the south.
So 20 years ago, is that what attracted you also?
No.
The openness?
I don't think it was because I don't think 20 years ago I even looked at it as an LGBT destination. I looked at it as I am here for my friend's 40th birthday. We're a group of gay and lesbian friends. 20 of us came down 20 years ago, and we all had a great time. I felt comfortable buying a small home because I didn't feel vulnerable. I didn't feel threatened in any way. I felt that we were welcomed, not that we were coming to, I mean, the popular terms of San Francisco or Provincetown, where we say, okay, these are really gay meccas. I didn't really feel that or sense that 20 years ago. Today, of course, there's a very strong presence, and the marketing and promotion of the area obviously identifies us as a valuable asset to the community in a multitude of ways, whether it's the brand new store that I just walked into last week that was owned by a gay couple from Guadalajara that decided they were going to move their design firm here to Puerto Vallarta from Guadalajara. Why? No. Because there's plenty of straight people that need their help.
Now, let me ask you, I mean, even from now, from last year to now, there's a big change in real estate prices, et cetera. Do you think that all of the influx of expats are kind of pricing out locals?
Well, like,
what's happening with the local
Mark,
people?
That is a true statement. And so what's happening is the natives, the native Mexican families that own the properties, is it a function of they're getting priced out, or is it a function of they're getting so much money for their family property that they've owned for 30, 40, 50 years that, you know, the little $45,000 house that I bought probably cost the family $2,500. And today, those homes are going to be sold for $500,000. Yeah. So the families that didn't sell out 20 years ago for $45,000 or $50,000 are selling out today for $500,000. And where are they able to go is to, you know, 15-minute drive outside the city, and they're getting spreads for $125,000. So they're, you know, we ask ourselves, okay, is this a detriment to the local population, or are we building an economy for that local population that is changing their quality of life?
I employ
31 people in building my new home today that I'm in the middle of. And I pay my people a little bit more than what the locals pay, but that's because I want quality and I want responsiveness and I want them to show up every day and work hard every day. And, you know, the question is, are we spoiling it for the locals? I don't think so. I think what we're doing is we are acknowledging the value that these hard workers offer to us today. And we offer employment in ways that is more respectful, that is more in line with the perceived economic value. And let me assure you, relative to what we are accustomed to paying in the United States, we're still getting a heck of a bargain, whether it's for a plumber or an electrician or a handyman.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. It was just in my mind. It's like a lot of these places, the locals get priced out and then they get pissed off because there's no place for them to move. But in this case, if they're getting paid what they're worth, then it seems like they're fine.
You know, the economic value of what they're getting paid is also based on the economic value of what the developers who are coming in and building. So if the developer is able to take a single family home and give the property owner, you know, say $500,000 for it, and they're able to build, say, five or six stories, and they're able to put, you know, four units per floor, they're taking one household and they're putting in, say, 24 households, and they're able to sell households for, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 on the low end here in the heart of the Romantic Zone. It's a lot of money, which is why I find it intriguing how many developers are coming to Puerto Vallarta that are Mexican nationals, the developers that are coming from Mexico City, that are coming from Monterrey, that are coming from Guadalajara, that are coming from Nuevo León, that are coming from Guanajuato, that are coming from every vast, you know, part of this city, of this country, excuse me, that sees the economic opportunity that exists. Now, in some ways, it's also been very, you know, questionable as to what they are building, because some of these guys where you can build five or six stories are somehow getting, you know, eight and nine and 10 stories. So therein lies the real question of the motivation. And it's a motivation based on supply and demand, because there's plenty of people, foreigners, that are coming to this country that are wanting a piece of paradise, and they're willing to pay the price. And so the developer's motivated by the number of buyers and the lack of supply here in Puerto Vallarta today.
Got it. So is living in a LGBTQ community important to you? And I don't think Vallarta really has one because everything is live and let live. It's like you welcome everyone, but do you feel more comfortable living in an LGBTQ community?
Mark, I'm very blessed and fortunate to have a very nice network of friends that understand my background, the fact that I survived not just the COVID pandemic, but I survived the HIV pandemic as well. And I think there's value in that, that people understand the struggles that we've gone through, that 40 years ago when I worked for a company in Dallas, and I couldn't say to my company, to my employer, I'm a gay man today. I think and in Puerto Vallarta today, it's very welcoming and it's very embracing, and nobody has to hide in a closet. I think today in Puerto Vallarta, there is a strong network, both within the straight community and the gay community, that crosses every boundary, and there is no judgment being passed. So when you say, how do you feel living in an LGBT community? Well, I'll just say, two blocks from my house are two different hospitals. I have friends that talk about going to the hospitals and that they have never been treated with more respect as a gay person at the hospitals. When in America today, we're giving our healthcare professionals the right to legally discriminate against us. And I don't hear that here in Vallarta. I have not felt it or seen it on a personal basis as well. And I think that's a real telltale sign when we've got our politicians giving Americans permission to discriminate.
Yeah.
So
it feels like we're going backwards here in the U.S.
Yeah. And you ask that question, how does it feel living within an LGBTQ community? I think it's the fact that we look at all of these kinds of fundamental basics. You know, when you go to the tax office to pay your property taxes here, and you can see people just like you and me, two women showing up to pay their property taxes, and two men showing up, and one might be brown and one might be black. You know, nobody's passing judgment, and they're walking in holding hands, just like the 85-year-old husband and wife that are walking in holding hands. That to me is beautiful. That to me is reassuring to know that I'm not going to be feeling threatened in a way that I'm from Texas. Let me assure you, there are many times I felt very threatened just going to the 7-Eleven or going to the the grocery store.
Yep.
I've never felt that way here in Mexico. You know, people have to remember in Mexico, I mean, we're kind of branching on a subject, but guns are not readily available by the average citizen in this country. And safety and security to me is a very important component of where do I want to live long term. When I go to Dallas and I'm driving a red Ford Focus station wagon and I'm being hijacked at the gas station, I'm being carjacked at the gas station, I've never had any kind of incident such as that happened here in Mexico. I've been accustomed to having my home robbed in Dallas, Texas. I've never been robbed. I've never had my home broken into here in Mexico. So it's really the trade-offs of what is the quality of life that we're looking for. I strongly advocate and support the quality of life here in Mexico because of my own personal experiences. Now, I will say I do speak fluent Spanish. I do honor and respect the culture here in Mexico. Understanding what you do and what you don't say to people. You know, it's just human decency.
Right. And being respectful.
Being respectful. And being respectful and mindful of the cultural traditions that exist in this country as well. My neighbors here in Puerto Vallarta, I live with local Mexicans in front of me, to the left of me, and to the right of me. Behind me was a single home that was bought that a condo building was built on. So that's built, that's filled with all kinds of nationals, you know, coming from Canada, Europe, the United States, and whatnot.
So. Do you think the gay will go away? Like there are places like Key West where it used to be, you know, quote unquote, very gay. Now it's gotten commercial and more, you know, heterosexual people have moved there. So a lot of times what I find out is the gays come in, they gentrify, they raise the prices of everything, and then everybody wants in. And so the gay goes away. So do you feel that? I know you can't be a mind reader, but you think that'll happen?
I personally don't believe it will happen. And the reason is that the Bay of Banderas, being as large as it is, having as much waterfront mass, beachfront, that everybody, there's enough beach for everybody and for each community to have their beachfront. I mean, everybody knows Los Muertos is the gay beach, but there are dozens of beaches from the North Shore to the South Shore. And I think that from that perspective, you're not going to see it. At the same time, I mean, I have friends that live in what I consider the big hetero high-rises north of town. And I have gays that live in the hetero high-rises south of town. And I've got gay friends that live in the residential private communities, just like the hetero families with their children that are raising children that are, you know, upper middle class Mexican families with gay couples living right next door. I think that there is a harmony within the LGBT community that in some ways we have infiltrated every community, and at the same time within the romantic zone you have a high concentration and high density of the LGBT community. And yes, you are absolutely correct, and this is where all the straight people want to come and live, because this is where they want to play, because this is where we've created the theaters.
Right, the gays have fun.
The gays have fun. Whether you go to Cantina Katrina, it's a gay-owned bar club where they bring in really great entertainment, bar entertainment. It's a bar cabaret. Great places like that, you know, and that's a place where it brings in all of the population bases that want to have a nice drink and a nice environment. Now, remember, in Mexico also, it's against the law to smoke cigarettes in public and in the bars and restaurants. So, you know, a lot of people think coming to Mexico, you're going to be exposed to lots of tobacco. And that is not the case here at all in Mexico. And the other thing is, sort of as a little added bonus, is that most people in most places are also very dog friendly. So a lot of us have our pets and we want our pet to accompany us when we go places. There's lots of beachfront
places. Lots of outdoor cafes.
Lots of outdoor cafes, lots of outdoor restaurants, lots of outdoor coffee shops. Puerto Vallarta is a huge destination for the digital nomad community as well. And Mexico, here in Puerto Vallarta, we've got excellent Wi-Fi, excellent internet.
Probably better than us.
Well, think about it, because this community was not initially built on a wired system. So they were able to come in with the wireless systems. And of course, energy efficiency is state of the art in Mexico. Here in Puerto Vallarta, you will see solar panels everywhere. You know, the cost of electricity in this country is more expensive here. And so that's why people are mindful of putting in solar systems. And people talk about solar pays for itself here in Mexico in about 2 years.
That's great.
There's a lot to be said for it. Even the water system here in Mexico is, you know, meets American standards for public drinking water. Now, most people like myself and every condo building here in town, you can actually drink the water out of the tap in these brand new buildings because they put their filter systems in place with an additional bacterial system, an additional ultraviolet system. So you can use the ice out of your ice maker in your refrigerator. A lot of people think, oh, Mexico, you can't drink the water. And that's not the case.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the climate there. So I know people, it gets hot in the summer and humid, correct?
It does. It gets very hot and humid. Right now here, we're sitting in the middle, you know, of a about 36 degrees Celsius temperature, and the humidity is probably at about 99%. And this is the challenge that, you know, we get accustomed to the rain, and it can rain every day, but the rains are just part of the reality that we live in the jungle. But of course, you know, come October, all the way through about April, May, June, it's beautiful. And that's what people come here for. I mean, what a lot of people say is Puerto Vallarta has a 9-month high season. And we have a 3-month low season.
Yeah, and, which is not bad. Season,
yeah, and that's not bad at all. That's not bad at all. I mean, I personally think that the rainstorms with the lightning storms are a piece of Mother Nature that most people don't really get to experience. What is a real jungle rainstorm?
Or we have a desert rainstorm, a monsoon, like we had just the other night here in Phoenix. And Phoenix is kind of like the same from April, I would say, to September. April, it starts getting really warm. I would say from May and June, it's really hot. And then it goes till September, it starts cooling off. So we have that same thing here too. And then we get those monsoons. So I guess every place has its, you know, its own climate. So for 9 months in Vallarta to be beautiful, it's definitely worth it.
One of the things I found very unique when I came to Mexico was their air conditioning. And they use these mini split systems, sort of what I would call a modern window unit. And in the 20 years that I've been here in Puerto Vallarta and living with this mini split air conditioning systems, they have proliferated through the United States. And they've become just as popular in the U.S. now as they are in Mexico. And this was an area that I got first introduced to, that type of air conditioning system where you have essentially true zoned air conditioning. You turn the unit on in your bedroom when you're in your bedroom. Mm-hmm. Turn the unit on in your living room when you're in the living room.
That's what they have in Europe.
Central heat and air that we're accustomed to in the United States, that you keep the entire house cooled all the time.
Right, and spending money where you don't need it, because if you're not in that room, you're still spending money.
That's right. And so from that perspective, I see Mexico in some ways a bit more advanced when it comes to being ecologically minded, being environmentally minded, mindful. I mean, there is a whole system of recycling here even, whether it's right down the street from my house is the recycler. Take your aluminum cans to the guy. Take your metal to the guys. There are people, you don't see the aggressive panhandling in this country because many of the poor people are actually resourceful from the standpoint of recycling.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's very amazing.
So we won't really get into gay bars because we know Vallarta has plenty of them, and they're more concentrated, I would think, in the romantic zone. Is that correct?
You know, there are other neighborhoods. Versailles is a neighborhood that's booming now. Cinco de Diciembre is another neighborhood that's booming. El Centro is booming. But I think in general, from the perspective that we as gays have become more open and more accepting and accepted, that we don't have to necessarily ghettoize ourselves. Now, as tourists, of course, we want to include and engage ourselves in environments. I'm a single man. I would love to find a partner. Now, I'm not going to find a partner sitting at home. You know, that's part of the other challenge here in Puerto Vallarta, that there are a lot of gay people. So you know, I use the term, I mentioned to you, gaycationship. you know, people come to Puerto Vallarta and they have gaycationships. They meet someone else that's on vacation. But at the same time, I'll just share with you that there's a very nice young man who owns a business here who came to Puerto Vallarta on vacation. He met a man that was also here on vacation. One lived in San Francisco, one lived in Chicago, and the two of them fell in love, developed a relationship, and decided that instead of going to each other's homes where they met here in Puerto Vallarta, they were going to come and start a business. And they did just that. And that's sort of a heartwarming awesome. Story of what the outcome is of how you can really make long-term lasting relationships and friendships here in Vallarta with people from all over the world.
That's awesome. So here's a good question. English, do you need to speak Spanish or can you get away with English or is it just respectful? Like in any place you're in Mexico, if I was moving to Mexico, I would try to learn the language as best as I can. What do you say about that?
Mark, I will tell you that I think here in Mexico, if you didn't speak a word of Spanish and you were polite and respectful with your English, people will be polite and respectful back to you. You can live your life very easily in this country without speaking Spanish. No question about it. Now, it's a level of decorum and respect as we talk about. So I think the locals really appreciate it when you speak with your worst Spanish.
Spanglish.
English accent, and they get you. You put a big smile on their face, and then they turn around and they start talking to you in English.
Right.
And that's the humorous side of it, because a lot of the locals do speak both English and Spanish because they've learned the language, of course, because everything that's customer service oriented, whether it's going to pay your electric bill or your water bill or going to the bank or going to the doctor. All of those, you know, going to the grocery store, the normal routine things, people, they know how to communicate. Whether you have a car or you walk or you ride the bus or you take a taxi, the taxi drivers can speak a little Spanish, a little English, and everybody seems to communicate just fine. I think that, as you pointed out clearly, out of respect for the community that you're living in, like myself, when I got here 20 years ago, I happened to have stumbled on a school fair that was taking place at the City Hall Plaza where they were selling books. I bought an English-Spanish dictionary. I bought all the kindergarten English-Spanish books. I bought the books that were how to talk to your house person, how to talk to your doctor. All these different trade type books that were English, Spanish, and that's how I perfected my vocabulary. I would say I speak very good Spanish, so I've been told, but I've been here 20 years and I've got, like I said, 31 workers on this house now. When I built the first house, you know, like any language, you learn all the dirty words first.
Right, exactly. You're right.
And the locals pride themselves in teaching you the dirty words. And in Mexico, when it comes to vocabulary, Mark, you asked a question, there's a term called doble sentidos, two meanings. And so there's a lot of things in Spanish that have double meanings.
Yes.
And all of the double meanings, from my experience, are groseros. They're nasty things. And you gotcha. Have to know what the locals telling you to repeat in Spanish that really is not nice, but it brings big smiles to everybody's face when a gringo says it.
Yeah, I would be saying stuff like, oh my God, terrible. I would be like drunken baby Spanish. That's how I would be talking. But yeah, I think my husband was learning Spanish through a private tutor. They were doing Zooms. And he was really good looking. and I didn't know what the word for hot was. So I actually said, what is the word for hot again?
Okay.
Caliente. So I said caliente, and they're like, oh, no, you don't say that.
since this is where do gays retire, and it's for gay men. So when I was building my first house 20 years ago, I had a water leak. And we were building the house, and the water was leaking. And I said to the plumber, viene, hay un gota. Gota is like a drip, a drop. And so in front of everybody, he says to me, ¿Qué es su preferencia? ¿Vergotitas, vergatotas? So in Spanish, the word verga means penis. But the word ver by itself means to see. Gotas by itself is a drop. But vergotas together, verga, means penis. So the double meaning is, do you prefer to see big penises or little penises?
That's awesome.
And of course, all my workers are around me, and one of them whispers in my ear to answer, vergotear. Vergotear. And vergotear means to watch the drops. To watch the drops.
Yeah.
Which was sort of the getting back at him that he didn't get the double meaning sort of pun to me.
Yeah.
The people are such a wonderful people. They really are warm and embracing. They really love life. And they really encourage you to participate, whether they want you to go to the charrerías, which is the Mexican rodeos, whether they invite you to their posadas, their Mexican Christmas dinners and parties, whether it's vamos por el río, come to the river with us, we're going to do a barbecue grill on the river on a Saturday or a Sunday. They want you to participate. They want to share with you and show you if you are open and receptive. And that's the key to it, is wanting to have that experience and making yourself available to go for that experience. Whether or not you can actually communicate in full-blown Spanish in their language, there is a nonverbal experience that takes place as well with the people here in Mexico.
Yep. Awesome. That's great. Tell us a little bit about the local economy. I know prices have gone up recently. Can you also provide some examples? If I wanted to buy a condo, a 2-3-bedroom condo, 2-bath, what would that cost?
Well, first of all, what we have to understand is we're dealing with a different monetary system. Here in Mexico, we operate on the peso.
Peso. Mm-hmm.
And the, of course, U.S. is the dollar. And what we've seen, say, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, when the peso was 20 to 1, 20 pesos to $1, let's say the taxi today that I took to go to Chabad cost me 80 pesos. Well, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, at 20 to 1, that would have been $4. Today, it's, say, 16 to 1. That puts the price at about, what, $6? You know, that's...
So, yeah, the exchange rate has changed.
Yes, so the exchange rate is one of the fundamental basics that we have to look at when we talk about prices have risen. But at the same time, when you come to Mexico and you go for dinner and you spend... let's say 320 pesos on a beautiful filet mignon, which effectively is $20 at a nice restaurant, what would be used to paying for that same meal in the U.S.? $35 or $40. So there's still value there. We just have to be mindful. Just like anywhere that you travel, are you going to the true tourist traps? Or as a retiree, do you move into the community and live within the city? Like a block from my house is Los Lirios, which is a great fresh seafood restaurant. They're closed on Mondays because he goes fishing on Mondays. So you get fresh, whatever he catches fresh, and then whatever the supply house brings to him, because you've got fresh food, fresh seafood coming right out of the Bay of Banderas. So the value proposition is very great. Now, of course, with condos, and you're talking about homes, home prices here have absolutely gone up, and it's all based on supply and demand. You ask, what can you buy a three-bedroom, three-bath unit for? Mark, you can buy a three-bedroom, three-bath unit for $400,000. Depending on where you buy, you can also pay $1.5 million. So as anything, when it comes to real estate, location, location, location.
Right.
You know, in Mexico, a lot of people have a hard time understanding pre-construction pricing, where they build a building, you buy pre-construction, you pay, say, 50% cash down, and you get a 30% discount off of the price. What we understand in the U.S. as the concept of buying a home and getting bank financing, that type of system has not traditionally existed here in Mexico. Today there are lenders now that are coming in offering financing. Sometimes it's the builders themselves that offer owner financing on the construction of the projects. So a lot of gay people that I know that have come down here, they've taken, say, for example, an equity recovery loan off of their home in Houston or Boston or Los Angeles, wherever they're coming from, and they bought a home 25 years ago or 30 years ago. The home's paid off. You know, they paid $250,000 or $200,000 for their home that today is worth $800,000. Mm-hmm. And they're getting an equity recovery loan, refinancing, leveraging the house they're in to buy a new home here. And of course, a lot of people here that have been buying homes, they buy homes based on the long-term economics of Airbnb and what is the income that they're going to receive off of the property that they buy here in Mexico to help supplement the cost of buying it. And otherwise, there's plenty of people that come here to retire that are coming from a different economic perspective. I had a friend that came here, retired with his Social Security check. For whatever reasons, his Social Security check is $1,970 a month. But he decided to come to Mexico because I helped him find an apartment for $600 a month. And it's really hard to find something like that in the U.S. And, you know, they say your housing should be less than 30% of your income. And at $600, that was within his budget. And so he's got a cute little apartment and has a comfortable lifestyle that would be very difficult to compare and find anything similar in the U.S.
No, you couldn't. Yeah.
That's right.
So, okay. So it's all over the place as far as real estate prices. You can get a, you know, a house or a condo anywhere from $3-4 up to $1 million or more, depending upon location.
That's right.
Okay.
And there are brand new townhouse development projects that are happening further away from the beach. And those homes, I mean, you can buy properties for $130,000 today.
Okay. You
know? I mean, and it's a different economic value, of course.
How about utility bills, electric bills, phone bills, cable bills, stuff like that?
Let me start by saying the responsibility of bills is a unique thing here in Mexico because they're what's called bimestre. In my case, I get my water bill and my electric bill every 2 months. So I get 6 bills a year. Now, for example, on my water bill, I go to the water company, SEAPAL, S-E-A-P-A-L, and in the first quarter, January, February of each year, if you pay your water bill 1 year in advance based on your average usage from the prior year, they will give you a 10% discount. So for me, I don't have investments in the U.S. that are paying me a 10% return. So for me, it's a good investment to get 10% discount off the water bill.
Sure.
Now, at the same time, the electric bill comes every 2 months as well. The electricity can be very expensive, and it's based on consumption. If you meet the minimum consumption, you actually get a government discount or a supplement. They pay a portion of your bill. But if you exceed that proportionate percentage of electricity, then the price of your bill is astronomically higher.
Wow.
And so you have to be mindful of your electric usage. But of course, like everything, banking and bill pay can all be done online. You don't have to go stand in a line in Mexico, which is an idea that someone asked me once before. Well, what's it like to go stand in line and pay your bills? I don't. And the reason is because, believe it or not, Mexico is a modern country with modern systems and technologies in place. It is definitely not a third world country.
So they do have online banking.
Absolutely. You have an application on your
phone. Do you have a Mexican bank?
I do. I bank at two Mexican banks. I bank at Intercom, which is very American friendly. And I bank at Bancomer, which is a very large Mexican bank. Bancomer is a BBVA bank. And some people in the U.S. know BBVA was Compass.
Yeah.
So banking in Mexico is very easy. There are Bank of America interrelationship banks here, HSBC, which is a bank people know in the U.S., just like Santander is a banking institution in the U.S. It's here in Mexico. And what I always tell people is the reason you have a problem when you go to the bank is because you as an American want to make it your way. If you just follow
and they want it immediate.
If you follow the process and the system that's in place here in Mexico, you will never have a problem. You were clapping at that. I'll say one of my other Herschelisms I tell people. If in Mexico you can learn the fact that your urgency is no one else's priority, you're going to get along just fine.
Yep. Good advice. Good Herschelism. So, okay. Do you have solar panels on your home?
I do not. Not on the home that I built 20 years ago, but the home I'm building today is designed to have solar panels. Yes.
Okay.
I have friends that have solar panels on their homes, and they're telling me that their monthly electric bill is like $2 a month.
It's nothing. Yeah.
Nothing.
It's definitely worth it.
Yes. I will say my high electric bill this past month, or what would be the past 2 months, was approximately 10,000 pesos. It was approximately $600, which if you break it down by month, that's about $300 a month.
Yeah.
And while that's a big electric bill, I'm also have my apartments are all bills paid.
Right.
So six apartments plus a six-bedroom home. So it's really, relatively speaking, you know, on comparison, not that outrageous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay. How about gas bills? Do you get propane?
So gas here in Mexico is delivered to your home in a big truck. It is propane gas. And so we have a gas tank on the house. And I run gas for my ovens and my stoves and my water. And that gas bill, it has gone up a bit from historical pricing from 20 years ago. But like everything, I don't consider it astronomically out of control. I do not own a car, even though I have a two-car garage. In the new home, I'm building a four-car garage. But I don't drive, and that's just a personal decision that I've made. I mean, I'll just share with you, I went looking to buy a car about 6 years ago. We have Uber here in Mexico. And when I took the Uber to the car dealerships and then walked to the second one because it was just right down the street, and then caught an Uber to go to the third and fourth one, and then caught an Uber to the fifth and sixth one. And as I'm getting further away from the house, and then I take the Uber back home with all of my catalogs, and I'm looking at the price of cars, and I'm looking at my credit card bill that just got charged with four Uber charges that totaled less than $10. Myself, what's the real
why bother?
Why bother with a car? I don't have to worry about parking it. I don't have to worry about insurance. I don't have to worry about maintenance and repairs. I don't have to worry about all the liabilities that are associated with car ownership. Of course, as I'm getting older, I'm saying to myself, and I'm building a house higher up on the top of the hill, I probably will get a car, but that's just all a function of timing. So,
but you can walk around Vallarta. Like, you can go live in a place and function without a car?
Absolutely. And I think one would be surprised at the number of expats that live within the heart of the city that don't own cars.
That would be me.
Yes, that would be me. Because the bus system is very user-friendly. The taxis are prevalent. The taxes have zoned rates, so it's not like you have to worry that you're going to get your head knocked off or you're going to be taken advantage of by the taxi drivers. And it's really pretty simple. It's like any place in the world, just like the U.S. You've got taxi drivers that are going to be trying to take advantage of you. And it's a simple initial question. Before you get in the car, you ask.
How much is it going to be?
Going to be.
Quanto costa?
Here to there. How much is it?
Right. So I have friends that moved from Phoenix to part of Vallarta years ago. And they, for the longest time, didn't have a car. I think they might now. But they said, oh, the only time we really need one is if we need to go out to Costco because it's by the airport. Right.
Well, the funny part of that is my routine is I spend 10 pesos to go to Costco, and I usually spend about 80 pesos on the Uber or the taxi to bring me from Costco completely loaded vehicle back to the house. Now, every once in a while, you know, of course, I got a lot of bathrooms and a lot of toilets, and that means lots of toilet paper and lots of paper towels. Yep. When I'm buying all those big bundles, sometimes I got to get a bigger vehicle. So they do have bigger, like, SUVs, right. That might be 100 pesos.
Okay.
So even the Costco runs nowadays, it's an easy way to work with that.
And 100 pesos in dollars is what?
So 100 pesos today in dollars is going to be about $7.
Oh, God. So worth it.
Yeah. So worth it.
Yeah. It's very worth it. Okay. Let's talk about food, one of my favorite subjects. Puerto Vallarta has many restaurants, I understand, many which are quite good. So tell us a little bit about the food scene.
Well, Mark, first of all, let me say, Puerto Vallarta is absolutely a gastronomic destination. You can choose any flavor that you have in mind, and you will find someone that offers that fare. Puerto Vallarta has what they call Restaurant Week, which is it's always in the summer, and it's designed obviously for locals, usually after the high season, come after May, August. They'll maybe sometimes do two different restaurant weeks, where the restaurants offer a 3 or 4 course meal, and it gives you the opportunity to really taste a lot of different restaurants. Now, obviously, they don't offer Restaurant Week during high season because that's when it's their chance to, you know, make their money from the tourism. But restaurants are very prolific. If you are creative in the kitchen, there's a restaurant here in town comes to mind called Tre Piatti. It's owned by a husband and wife who were trained in San Francisco. And they brought their culinary skills here. The husband is the chef. The wife is the pastry chef, And they do some spectacular food, world-class food. You want to go and have a dynamic meal with a tablecloth, it's there. You want to go to Casa Kimberly, which was Elizabeth Taylor's home, that has a restaurant called the Iguana Cafe. It's a dynamic restaurant. You can go to the beachfront to a place called Cuetes and Cuetes, which is a true little locals restaurant, open air, on the beach, have a whole red snapper, and it's going to cost you less than $10. Hmm. You can dine if you choose to do the taco tour thing that a lot of people love, and you can go to the taco stands for 95 cents for a delicious beef brisket taco. When you and your husband Peter come to town, we'll go and I'll take you to Tacos Champai for beef brisket tacos. Or we can go to Mariscos Cisneros, which is a taco stand that does seafood tacos. I personally don't eat pork, but there's lots of different kinds of
seafood
taco stands. There's a place here that does amazing lamb. They do lamb tacos. You can get cabrito, the goat tacos. There are probably a half a dozen different taco tour companies that take tourists around just to show them what's available when it comes to street food. And you can have great street food. You can have your breakfast, lunch, and dinner for $3.50. So there's the ranges of every end. I mean, you can go high end to a place, excuse me, Café des Artistes, which is a beautiful,
I've heard of that,
linen tablecloth restaurant. There are restaurants galore. If you're vegetarian or vegan, there's a place called Veggie Italia, which is an Italian vegetarian restaurant that also offers vegan options. You want good, clean food? There's a restaurant called Salud, one of my favorites. Now, Salud does such a whopping breakfast and lunch business, they close every day at 5 p.m. You got to get there before they close. And the farmer's market here in the what's called the Emiliano Zapata Farmer's Market is a beautiful market. You can go and buy all the fresh produce that you want. You can go to the Cinco de Sembre Market, which is the place I was telling you that's north of the river, and they have a beautiful seafood section to their market as well. The meat market that's right here. The bakeries, you want fresh bread? Do you want gluten-free? Do you want no nuts? Do you want sesame seeds and pecans and every nut you want in a bread? The bakeries are prolific as well.
I'm drooling.
Fresh homemade tortillas, two blocks from my house. If you go in one direction, you got your choice, and two blocks in the other direction, you have your choice.
And is there international restaurant, international cuisine as well?
You know, it's interesting when you say international, people always say, well, I want good Mexican food. And I always say, well, what do you think is Mexican food? Because if you think Mexican food is chips, tortilla, salsa, guacamole, enchiladas, tacos, yes, you can find those restaurants. Do you want gourmet international food, lamb chops, a rack of lamb? You want foie gras? You can choose those restaurants too. So the answer is yes, every cuisine. You want to go to, you want Thai food? There's Thai food. You want Japanese food? You want sake? There's a beautiful sake garden restaurant that you can go to. There's a Scotch whiskey bar if you want to go to, with has a restaurant as well. Wow. So here in Puerto Vallarta, people are, their eyes are wide open as to what people want that are coming here. And what we know is people want a variety and they want the option of everything.
Right.
And the truth is everything here is available.
Exists. Boy, it sounds like it's right up my alley. So Okay. Restaurant scene is great. Everything. Check, 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 check.
Mark, one thing that you haven't brought up, if I can volunteer,
yeah,
is you haven't asked anything about healthcare.
I was getting to that.
Ah.
I was getting to that. In fact, that's my next question. So tell us about healthcare, Herschel. Tell us the comparison to the United States healthcare system. Tell us about the different types of insurance that you can get. Like if you get buy private insurance versus their public, I think Mexico does have a public system as well. And explain a little bit about that.
So here in Mexico, depending on your status as a resident, if you're a temporary resident or permanent resident or a citizen, if you're a permanent resident, you can actually get into the public health care system, which I do have some friends that participate in that. If you want to have private health insurance is just as readily available here like we pay in the United States. I personally have Blue Cross Blue Shield in Texas, and I use my health insurance in Texas when I have health issues. But I've also chosen to voluntarily, out of pocket, see health professionals here in Mexico. And people should realize and understand that we are all the same animals. The health care here in Mexico is just as good as what we have in the United States. People don't realize how many U.S. doctors have actually trained at the University of Guadalajara right here in Mexico, and they go and practice in the U.S., that the technology and the equipment is all the same. Now, in my opinion, the healthcare here in Mexico might be a step advanced, because while we have huge restrictions when it comes to the FDA, we have huge restrictions when it comes to our prescriptions in the United States, that our health insurance in the U.S. has to start with your primary care physician that authorizes a referral to a secondary specialist. Here in Mexico, you can go see a primary care physician and you can spend out of pocket $5 or $20 to see a healthcare professional. I'll give you an example. Last year, I had problems with my eyes. I went to see the optometrist complaining that my glasses weren't, my prescription for my glasses wasn't correct. And the optometrist tells me, you need to go see an ophthalmologist. So I went to go see the ophthalmologist. And the doctor I'm at the optometrist's office, and he gives me the ophthalmologist's number, and I'm there with a 5 o'clock appointment to see the optometrist. And I call the ophthalmologist, and the ophthalmologist says, if you would like to come in today, I have an opening at 7:30. And I asked, okay, how much is it going to cost me? And the doctor basically, in pesos, the conversion was approximately $40 to see the ophthalmologist. I go to see the ophthalmologist for $40 out of pocket, and he tells me, Mr. Weisfeld, you have 2 solid cataracts over both eyes. The only thing that's going to fix that is cataract surgery. You'll have to do lens replacement. And if you would like, I can do that for you. I have my own operatory here. It's going to cost you approximately $3,200 per eye. I left that doctor. I called some friends, asked for if they had any referrals. I went to go. I called another ophthalmologist as I'm leaving the ophthalmology appointment at approximately 8:30 p.m. And the doctor's associated with a hospital. He says, I can see you tomorrow at 12 noon.
Wow. So for the surgery?
Well, this is another ophthalmologist.
Oh, okay.
For second opinion. So the ophthalmologist at the hospital tells me it'll be $42.50 to see him. I go to see him. He tells me the next day, you have two solid cataracts. We're going to have to do a whole series of tests on your eyes to determine what kind of lenses could be replaced. And I recommend that you go see this woman at a brand new hospital, state-of-the-art facility, state-of-the-art equipment. And I call that, and that was on a Friday, and she says, I can see you on Tuesday. I go to the hospital, this brand new hospital, La Jolla, it's called the La Jolla Hospital, and I see her on Tuesday. It cost me $45 to see the woman in the brand new hospital with state-of-the-art equipment that charged me approximately another $105 to have a series of battery of tests done on my eye to figure the size of my eye, to do the mapping of the eye, to figure the pressure of the eye, to figure out all of the details that would be needed to know what kind of lens my eyes would take. I contemplated, once I did all that, that because I had health insurance in Texas and I'd already met my deductible last year, that I should go to an ophthalmologist in Texas. My primary care physician, I spoke to them, referred me to an ophthalmologist. The appointment was approximately 3 weeks later. Not one day later, not 2 days later, but three weeks.
I
go to the ophthalmologist, and the ophthalmologist business manager comes in to tell me that the appointment was going to cost me approximately $300 and that they were not within my network. And I said, well, no, that wasn't the plan. The plan was it was supposed to be in my network.
In network.
Weisfeld, I'm sorry, this isn't in your network. While I'm sitting in an office that looks like the equipment was from about 1980. And I'm thinking, I'm going to pay twice as much to see one doctor with antiquated equipment compared to the three doctors that I saw with state-of-the-art equipment. So I sat there, I called my doctor, I called my health insurance, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and said, this doctor that was referred isn't in my network. I need someone in my network. Long story short, the price of the same exams in the U.S., as you can hear me saying, because I'm giving you exact numbers,
right,
was like five times more in the U.S. than it is here. That's why in Mexico, medical tourism is such a huge industry. Whether any type of elective surgery, whether it's dental work, whether it's implants, people come here to Mexico. People who don't have insurance come here. I know some people that came to have a hernia operation. It cost them approximately $2,800 all in to have a hernia operation here in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, using the same equipment and the same technology that we use in the United States.
So you do everything out of pocket when you're in Mexico. If you do it in Mexico, it's all out of pocket.
I do. But you can get health insurance here in Mexico. I voluntarily chose, and I don't have health insurance in Mexico. You know, the other thing that we have to remember is that when you're not feeling well, in the U.S., we're starting to see what I call doc-in-the-boxes, where they're putting doctor's offices right next to your CVS or your Walgreens, your Rite Aid, which here in Mexico, that's the way it's always worked. And those doctors, which are trained doctors, cost you like 40 pesos, 50 pesos, like $2 to see the doctor. And remember, in Mexico, all medicine other than controlled substances, you can get at the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. You can get from the pharmacist.
Right. Without going to the doctor.
Without going to the doctor, without having to get a prescription, without crazy prices you have to pay.
Right. Yeah. That's the way it is in Europe too. The
prescription drugs filled. Yeah.
So it seems like healthcare is a winner too. in Mexico.
It is. It is absolutely a winner. You know, to come and have a complete physical and have all of your blood work done, and, you know, out of pocket, you're talking about spending $90.
Right.
I had a colonoscopy done here because my doctors wanted me to do colonoscopy 2 years ago, and I hadn't met my deductible yet. My deductible was $17,000. So here in the U.S., that colonoscopy would have been a couple of thousand dollars, and here it cost me a couple of hundred dollars.
Yeah. So for the sake of time, Herschel, quickly, how can you obtain a visa if you want to become a resident? Is it through the consulate in the United States?
Your consulate in your city, it's initiated in the United States. So what you do is you have to go to the Mexican consulate in the United States. They will provide you the application and paperwork, which almost all of it now is done online. You go in with your application completed, with your supporting documents, which to travel to Mexico as a tourist, you do not need a visa. You only need the visa if you want to establish residency, whether it's permanent residency or temporary residency.
Temporary.
And the way that works is once you get approved by the Mexican consulate in the U.S., they will paste a visa into your passport. You come into Mexico. A lot of people don't understand and they don't realize that visa has to be stamped upon your entry. And that stamp is the starting timeline of 30 days to go to the Mexican immigration office in Mexico to initiate your residency.
Gotcha.
That little step is a very key, important component.
Gotcha. Excellent. So is there anything that you don't have in Vallarta that you used to have in Texas that you miss?
You know, I think everything is a trade-off. And you say, is there anything that you miss? You know, today with modern technology, here we are having a conversation. Now, I understand that this is a podcast, so it's only the words that we're speaking, but we're sitting here looking at each other. And our images are as clear as we're looking at as a clear TV.
Right.
You know, technology today and the reality of COVID has taught the world that we can still engage with our communities via online applications with video and voice technology. You know, what do you miss? You miss having the old friends around. Maybe you miss going to the fine art museum, you know, for myself, being engaged in the cultural community and going to modern ballet or modern opera or going to the symphony, going to, you know, big name concerts. Those type of activities to me are the trade-offs. And what are the trade-offs? The trade-offs are I live in a beautiful natural environment. I can go take a hike up in the mountains. I can take a beautiful stroll along the southern shore of the Bay of Banderas that has very few tourists going from Boca de Tomatlan to Las Animas. So it's the trade-off of the cultural differences and variety. What are the things that you miss? Okay, so maybe there's not a Trader Joe's here. You know, you hear people saying, I'd love to have a Trader Joe's here in Puerto Vallarta. But we don't. But we do have Costco. We do have Sam's. You've got Office Depot. You have Office Max. You know, if you're a fast food junkie, well, of course, you know, you've got the Kentucky Fried Chickens and you've got the Church's Fried Chicken and you've got the Carl's Jr. Hamburger and you've got the Burger King and the McDonald's. And
they can keep it.
Yeah, and exactly. And it's anywhere in the world. You know, for me, I would rather eat at all of the locals. And that's one of the things I pride myself when my tourists come to town. There's Starbucks in the city. I'd rather let's go to Cafe Catedral or let's go to Ono or let's go to Cafecito Mio to go to the local places to support the local community and not the big corporate enterprises. So the big corporate enterprises are moving into this community because we see that there is the population base that will consume that. But the opportunities that exist in this city, we have a local woman who saw the value of creating a new Puerto Vallarta museum to showcase the arts and talents of local regional creatives, because they're endless. The creative community is really dynamic and diverse, and we see a lot of creatives coming from other countries that are coming to live here to create as well. So it's an engaging community that is inviting and welcoming to everybody, whether you're black or white, whether you're rich or poor, whether educated or uneducated. I think everybody's living a world and a life in some ways that's great harmony, great balance, and that's part of what has made me really enjoy this community. Of course, building a home that I can welcome my friends and my family to come stay with me, it was one of my goals, and we each have our own goals, and those goals are achieved by making your own vision come to fruition, whatever that might be.
Do you think there are any cons? Can you think of any cons at all?
You know, I think when you ask cons, I think the cons are the reality of individuals that put themselves in vulnerable situations that proves to end up being such that attracts the media attention that talks about how bad places are. Whether it's the gringo that thinks that they're going to engage with the drug cartel, because there is a drug cartel. We can't be naive to that fact that it exists. But if you don't revolve and involve and engage yourself in that community, you're not going to be vulnerable to it.
Right. Exactly.
And so when you say, is there a con? Yes, there is a con. You have to be mindful and respectful of where you're living and what you're doing.
Because right, it's not the U.S.
You jeopardize yourself. You put yourself into trouble by thinking that you can involve and engage yourself in that community.
Excellent.
Yeah. Let me just say, Mexico, one of the things that I often point out as a mere fact is there's never been a child who has brought a gun to school and shot up his friends.
There you go. That says it all.
Yeah.
So in wrapping up, Herschel, what would you tell our audience if they're thinking of relocating to Puerto Vallarta?
I tell everybody, if you think you want to come to Mexico, that you should plan to come here with an initial 3-month or 6-month plan of renting to get to know the neighborhoods and to get to know what the differences are of the neighborhoods, to get to understand your mobility ability, whether it's you're getting a little bit older and you say, I really love that beautiful apartment on top of the hill. But after 6 months, you realize, you know what? I just can't handle that walk every day. That the other thing that I suggest to people is that you should consider renting for a year. And the reason I say a year is because then you get to see the environment and the climate and how it does change. Because you choose to live in one spot that's beautiful in the low season because you've got higher elevations with more wind and more breeze. And yet in the high season, you want to be lower down into the city, into the flatlands where all the action activity is going on. So it's really the trade-off of the cultural environment, the residential environment that you're looking for. In the romantic zone, in El Centro, we don't have big grocery stores. We have small markets. People from New York are very accustomed to small markets. You know, you've got a market 4 blocks on this side and 3 blocks on that side. And so there's the trade-off of what community do you want to live in? I think that you have to understand that Puerto Vallarta is not for everyone. And everybody that comes here loves Puerto Vallarta and they want to make it their home. But you're coming here for a moment in time and you're not here with the full-time living of a living lifestyle of year-round. Right. So as a tourist, there's a very different environment.
It's that party environment.
Exactly. And the economic vacation of living here for 3 months and having a blast and blowing it out, as opposed to living here for a full year and understanding what the differences are. Absolutely. I will think that you too would also find that the local people are very warm and very endearing and very engaging, and they will be just that, and they will respond to your interest in engaging and wanting to be a part of the community. I'm going to say to you, we were talking a little bit about the dogs, the fact that I have dogs. One of the things that people find here is the cost of vet care is astronomically a lot less expensive than vet care in the United States.
So I've spent a pretty penny on vet bills.
Exactly. I will share with you, one of my dogs as a puppy had parvovirus, which generally kills.
Yep.
And she was on IV in the vet for approximately 2 weeks. And the total vet bill cost me about $400. Now, that vet bill in the U.S. would have been thousands of dollars.
Let me compare that to my yellow labs. She tore two ACLs, different legs, and each of those surgeries cost at least $5,000.
Exactly.
So there we go. So anyway, where could we, with your compound and your rentals, where could anybody rent your place? Or
Mark, I appreciate you asking that question, and I realize that this is a public podcast. I've never put Hacienda Hirchito onto any of the rental platforms. I've always rented it through word of mouth and through friends and family. Hacienda Hirchito, which is Hercito, does have a Facebook page, Hacienda Hirchito. And I have a lot of friends and residents that stay here, and you know, they post nice things, and I think part of it is just the exclusiveness and privacy by not being on a public forum.
There you go. Well, you're going to have to privately email me the address or the information, so this way I can pay you a visit when I'm there.
It would be my pleasure to host you and Peter.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. I want to thank you so much. This was so educational, inspirational. You were wonderful. If you were here, I would hug you.
Thank
you so much for participating. It was a pleasure meeting you and talking to you. And we definitely have to keep in touch.
We will. Mark, can I just, as we continue this conversation, there was one subject you didn't pick up on, that you didn't touch, and that was the spiritual being.
Okay.
And the fact that here in Puerto Vallarta, there is so much opportunity to find whatever spiritual space you want, whether it's with organized religion, or whether it's with Mother Nature, whether it's finding your place of harmony and balance. There are gay people that have created Christian faith-based, you know, Jesus-based houses of worship. And there are gay people that have created Jewish places of worship. And whatever your spirituality is, that opportunity exists here in Vallarta as well. And that within itself is also the opportunity to create a community that provides the support that one might need when they come to Vallarta, if you're coming without a family, without a community.
That's very important. Thank you. Thank you for reminding us. And yeah, that's available. So that's wonderful. Again, Herschel, thank you so much for being a part of this. And we'll be in touch real soon, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast And consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.